And just to make things worse, the capital's population seemed to have come to the conclusion that the resistance, their liberators, were the true enemy. Intellectually, Schiller could grasp the crude physical factors involved in that process, yet he was constitutionally incapable of truly sympathizing with anyone who could entertain such a bizarre notion. It involved such a profound rejection of God's will in favor of such purely selfish, material considerations of this world that he literally could not understand it. Yet whether he could understand it or not, he'd still been forced to admit its existence and factor it into his own increasingly depressing thinking. Under Carizian protection, trade was beginning to flourish once more in southeastern Coruscant. Goods were flooding the ports, businesses were open. Prince Hector's tariffs and import duties, many of which had been heavily increased as he prepared to resist the Carizian invasion, had been slashed, and Carizian investors were clearly on the lookout for opportunities. The capital's economy had not yet recovered to pre-invasion levels, but it was approaching them quickly, and at a rate which suggested it would soon exceed them. At the same time, the devastating blow Garvey had dealt to Wyman's organization had brought all coordinated, centrally managed resistance to an end. A handful of his people might have escaped, but they were too scattered, driven too deeply into hiding to accomplish much. That had brought the spontaneous incidents Wyman had been carefully nursing to a sudden, knee-buckling halt. What was left were far more often than not outbreaks of pure thuggery, however little Schiller liked admitting that. They were no longer carefully targeted. Indeed, they were so poorly targeted, they were virtually random, almost as likely to inflict damage on temple loyalists as on the traitors. That was turning a steady trickle of those temple loyalists against the people responsible for their own losses. And those responsible for it were also being dealt with ruthlessly by the authorities. Which meant those attempting to resist the occupation were increasingly seen as the source of violence and destruction, while those supporting the occupation were seen as the citizenry's protection from acts of violence. It would have taken a Bedardist to explain that chain of logic to Schiller. Surely anyone ought to be able to understand that it was the occupier's presence which was provoking the violent response. That being the case, what twisted chain of reasoning could possibly give them credit for suppressing the violence rather than assigning them the blame for having caused it in the first place? Yet however bizarre he might find the thought, he couldn't deny that it was happening. And even more discouragingly, the Regency Council was actually garnering an increasing degree of respect, even among the capital's temple loyalists, for its restraint. No one was simply being arrested and tossed into prison just in case. Garvey's guardsmen weren't particularly gentle with those who resisted arrest, but anyone who was arrested was also charged, and no one who'd been charged was punished without a trial. And while they were in prison awaiting trial, they were permitted access to temple loyalist clergy and to family members, which just happened to knock any rumors about prisoners being secretly tortured neatly on the head. There'd been quite a few executions, and everyone in Manchir knew there were going to be more, but the Regency Council had been scrupulous about maintaining at least the semblance of justice. It had become depressingly clear that there would be no general uprising, not on the scale they needed, in the southeast. There would still be some support, some knots of resistance, and it was probable a substantial portion of the people would exhibit at least passive resistance when the moment came. But none of that could disguise the fact that when they finally launched their own uprising, beginning here in the north, they would be initiating not a general insurrection, but a civil war, right here in Coruscant, between those willing to lick the Carizian hand and those still loyal to Mother Church and Prince Divan. and every day only tilts the odds a little more against us, Shalair thought bitterly. Anvil Rock and Tartarian are already moving to expand their tidy little citadel down there in the southeast, and from the sounds of things, Baron Blackcliff is about to sign his soul away and publicly support them. He shook free of his depressing reflections and nodded to Craggy Hill. I think disappointing would be one way to describe those reports, my lord, yes, he said dryly. Well, I have a bit of news which is considerably more encouraging, I think, the Earl told him. It doesn't have anything to do with anything going on down there in the south, I'm afraid. But Zebediah has finally stopped dancing around. He has? Shalair sat up straighter, expression suddenly intent, and Craggy Hill smiled. It was not, the prelate thought, an especially pleasant expression.